From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And we are on day three of our special coverage of the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Last night, attendees heard from former President and Illinois State Senator Barack Obama, but they seem to be even more electrified by the speaker just before him, former First Lady Michelle Obama. Here she is making the case for Democratic nominee Kamala Harris.
We know folks are going to do everything they can to distort her truth. My husband and I sadly know a little something about this. For years, Donald Trump did everything in his power to try to make people fear us. See, his limited, narrow view of the world made him feel threatened by the existence of two hardworking, highly educated, successful people who happen to be black. Tell him that the job he's currently seeking might just be one of those black jobs.
If she wins, Vice President Kamala Harris would make history as the first woman president. She's already the first black woman to be the nominee of one of the major parties, and she's the second black woman ever elected to the U.S. Senate. The first black woman elected to the Senate is my first guest today. Carol Moseley Braun was a U.S. Senator from Illinois from 1993 to 1999. She later served as U.S. Ambassador to New Zealand and Samoa. I spoke with her earlier this morning. Ambassador Carol Moseley Braun, welcome back to The 21st Show. Thank you for making time to be with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
I wanted to get your top-line reactions. Last night in Chicago, we heard from former President Barack Obama, former First Lady Michelle Obama. They seemed to be well-received speeches in the room. What was your reaction?
Oh, that was my reaction, too. They were both great speeches. Michelle Obama surprised me. Hers was so good. I wasn't expecting that much from her. But hers was wonderful. His was very good. And so were the other three speeches. Doug Emhoff spoke, the second gentleman. He was very good. They were all good. And so I was delighted to be in the room and have a chance to be around that many Democrats, all rooting for the same thing, which is to elect Kamala Harris in November.
But you were an early supporter of Joe Biden in his bid 4 years ago. Maybe we need to go back even further. Can you talk about, I think this was your first encounter with him. You've told the story before many times, but when he made an unannounced visit to your apartment shortly after you had first been elected to the Senate in 1992.
The Cherry Pie story, right?
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one. I've heard it where he cold called you from O'Hare Airport, or maybe he was in the lobby and had a doorman call up.
Right.
I don't know what the true version of that is, but
He said he was at O'Hare, but he showed up in 10 minutes. It was really fast. You don't get from O'Hare in that amount of time. So he showed up really fast, and we sat. I had gone downstairs. The building had a grocery store. So I bought a cherry pie and I popped that in the oven and started some coffee. And so when he got there, we had cherry pie and coffee and a lovely conversation. And that changed the trajectory of my next six years in the Senate. He persuaded me to go on the Judiciary Committee, and I agreed after talking with him. It was a very important decision because, quite frankly, Judiciary Committee was where I had some of my most memorable experiences in the Senate. That's where the Confederate flag debate started. That's where the choice issues were debated. And so it was really a great thing that I went on that committee. But I hadn't been inclined to do so before his visit.
And it was helpful to him because his image was pretty well bruised by this point because of the way Anita Hill had been handled during Clarence's confirmation hearings before that committee.
Exactly. And I tell you, I told a joke which he never laughed at. I mean, all these years, he's yet to laugh at this joke. I thought it was hilarious. He didn't think it was funny. But I said to him, "You just want Anita Hill on the other side of the table." I said, "That's why you're urging me to go on this committee." And he didn't laugh.
So, okay, given you have this history with President Biden, I wonder what it's been like for you watching, especially what happened since that debate at the end of June and the way the party, many in the party, a lot of people were with him, but a lot of people, including former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, seemed to think it was time for him to retire, which is ultimately what he decided to do, or at least from the campaign.
Well, and the fact of the matter is, the debate performance was terrible. I mean, I think everybody, we all agree on that. But he didn't need to be, he shouldn't have been kicked to the curb as unceremoniously as he was, I think. And like I said, Joe Biden has been such a good and strong man and such a good and strong advocate for the people. I would have followed him gladly through the gates of hell. But as it turned out, even surprised to me, and I thought I was close to him. I am close to him. But I did not know until the 11th hour that he was going to step aside like that. And, you know, he did the right thing in the final analysis. He did the right thing. He stepped aside. Kamala's going to be a stronger candidate, and that's a really good thing. But, like I said, Joe had given so much, I did not expect him to be kicked to the curb again as unceremoniously as he was.
Interesting. So, I mean, it sounds like you just said it right there. You do think that Vice President Harris will be a stronger candidate than Biden would have been.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Say more about that.
She's terrific. No, she brings a fresh face. She brought enthusiasm. I mean, you could feel the enthusiasm in that convention room for her. And so she brings all those positives and none of the negatives to this campaign, and she'll be able to beat Donald Trump in November, which, of course, in the final analysis, is the challenge here. Who can win this election? You know, for all the polls and all the rah-rah, in the final analysis, it really is how many votes do you have and where are those votes coming from. And I think she can put together an electoral college strategy that will have her win this election, and I think we'll all be celebrating in November. I hope.
So I want to go back. You were first elected 1992. This was the year of the woman, it was known as. What was it like for you joining the Senate in 1993? Which, of course, to remind listeners, had never had a black woman serving in the Senate until that time.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Yeah, that's right. I used to call it hyperspace because I went from being a state legislator to this focus of intense speculation and interest. And that, for me, was a little off-putting. I did not know how to handle some of the press. I should have been better at it, but I wasn't. And I failed to put people around me who knew better how to navigate those waters. And so it wound up being more difficult than I think it could or should have been, just because I was so new.
More difficult than it could or should have been. Did you find your fellow senators were welcoming? It was certainly an old boys club, an old white boys club at the time.
Right, that's correct. Well, you know, there was a group of them who were more than welcoming. People like Ted Kennedy, like Claiborne Pell, like Paul Simon. I mean, there were people who reached out to me who were just brilliant. And that part, that made it a little easier. Pat Moynihan was one of them. So I wound up with a group of being protected, really, by a group of senators who I just read about, people who I did not know before I got there. And they were very, very nice to me. So I want to always give them the kudos, because if there was any failings, it wasn't theirs, it was mine. And I did not take advantage of, I didn't know how to take advantage of their support. But they were wonderful. There were a few standout horribles, but they paled in comparison with the support I got from other senators. And so in that regard, I'm grateful for the experience. I'm forever grateful to the people of Illinois for breaking ground and making history by electing me.
Well, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I have a strange idea of fun, but yesterday for fun, I went back and pulled the election results from 1992, county by county, and reading through some of the counties that you carried strongly, places that today are solidly what we would call red counties, all for Trump. Talk about what has happened. What was it like for you campaigning in Southern Illinois, where you carried, where you were successful in a lot of places?
Well, it wasn't bad. I'll tell you something. That was in the days when I think people were more prepared to be bipartisan than they are even now. And so I got support from across the board and across the state. And again, I'm ever grateful for that. And I didn't have, I think because I've been in the state legislature before. And so I've been in many of these places and had worked for many of the people who voted for me. And so it wound up being just a wonderful capstone of that career. And starting a new one with the support from across the state was wonderful. And so I have no regrets at all about that. You're right. Some of them are very hardcore red now, but they were prepared to break ground with a new Democrat in 1992.
Do you think, is there hope for Democrats winning back those voters that have gone pretty far away from the Democratic Party in recent years? Or is America just too polarized and we have to find a new way forward?
We're very polarized. And you remember back in the day, Tony Blair, I think, coined the phrase third way. And so did Bill Clinton. I think that if we just speak to the people about their interests, how we're going to make their lives better, that will give us the basis for getting those voters back. And I believe we can. I believe that Kamala has the ability to do it. I believe that as a country, we're ready for it to move forward and to get past some of the partisan divisions that characterize our politics today.
You have said in interviews that sexism is even more ingrained in our culture than racism. How have you seen that play out throughout your political career?
Well, there's a word called massage noir. You may have heard it. It's kind of a mishmash of the French noir for black and misogyny for, which is, you know, hatred of women. And it's very profound. And quite frankly, you know, I travel a fair amount at this point in my life. And everywhere you go in the world, women are second-class citizens. And I just hope that we break through and lead the way as a nation. Actually, other countries have had female heads of state before us. And so I'm hoping that the United States will get to that point in this election and elect Kamala Harris. She has the ability to show people a different way to do business, a way that works for everybody. And I think that is what the American people want. They don't want to get the divisions, they want to get past. And they want to have a government that works for everybody and that does so in the least intrusive way possible.
You are on so many short lists. One of them is the number of African-American women who have been elected to the United States Senate. That's a list of two people. Harris is one, and you were the other, of course. There were the number of African-American women elected to Congress. Shirley Chisholm was the first. She ran for president in 1972. One of the things she has said is that, I think this is when she was elected to Congress, but the door is not open yet, but it is ajar. I wonder what you think about those words today.
I think she was prescient, and she saw it exactly. The door is ajar, and very ajar. My little niece said to me one time when she was 12, maybe she was 11 or whatever, but anyway, she was very, very young, and she said, "But Auntie Carol, all the presidents are boys." And I said, "No, sweetie, a girl can be president, too." And I believe, if not with Kamala, we are close to getting there, where people will get past that and just look to talent and capacity and faith in the American people. That's what it takes. That's what the leadership takes. And I just think that women are as capable of that kind of leadership as anybody else. Gender should not be and will not be a limitation in terms of the ability. This is America, after all. And quite frankly, if this country stands for anything, it's that opportunity. Talent trumps all these preconditions and prejudices, and you can be anything, whether you're a boy or not. You can be president.
I wonder, if Harris is successful, what would you like to see accomplished during a potential future Harris administration?
I think we have to do something about housing prices. I think we have to do something about the economy so that young people feel they have opportunity in this country. And they don't feel they're not as oppressed by debt, and they're not as oppressed by financial realities. I think that she's going to focus in on those things, the opportunity economy, right? So that we manage to provide opportunity to everybody and restore opportunity particularly young people. I mean, one of the things I've been impressed about this convention is how many young people there are. It's really encouraging to me to see people younger than myself, on the convention floor, participating in this. One lady even brought her, it looked like 8 or 9 year old daughter. I thought this was brilliant. So, we've got to provide more opportunities to the generation coming after us than our parents left for us. And I mean, that's always in the American way. Each generation makes it a little better. And I just hope that that she will be able to do that and focus, and sounds like she wants to work with the economy in such a way that young people have a chance. And I think that's our challenge.
Last question. I understand you have a memoir. You're working on a memoir. Is there anything you can tell us about that?
Well, just that, I have somebody help me. I have a couple people help me. Great team put together to make sure this thing happens. And I just want to make sure that I don't make any errors. Remember, a memoir is just what you remember.
Yeah.
And when you get to a certain age, what you remember gets colored in rose-colored glasses. So.
Well, I hope we can have you.
Out.
I hope we can have you back when it is published. Thank you so much for being with us today.
That'd be lovely. I'd like that. Thank you.
More to come here on the 21st Show after a short break. Stay with us.